come ashore?
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
Hello there, and welcome again to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. I'm Mark Suddeth, your host. Great to have you along with me as we continue to look back at the year 2006. Here in this episode, going to be a little bit more lighthearted than the last couple of episodes. Got a pretty funny story to tell you about how I was trying to deal with some construction issues. I know, right? And believe me, it's pretty funny. So we're going to talk about that, and it's part of this amazing project that Lowe's had actually asked me to do. Usually I would go to them with ideas, but this is a situation where they had asked me to do something, and I was glad to do it, and yet it turned out that it would have this pretty humorous story that I'm going to tell you about here. And again, we're talking about the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina a lot, you know, because that was such an overwhelming event. It had such an indelible mark left on the coast of Mississippi as well as Louisiana for obvious reasons. And, you know, a lot of those scars are still there even today, even, you know, emotionally and physically, of course. But in 2006, of course, they dominated those scars. They were still so fresh, very open, if you will, these wounds. And so a lot of what we talk about is related to the 05 season and that aftermath, and some of the fallout, and other things that we have discussed here. And this is going to, you know, be a continuation of that for the most part as we move through. This is now getting through July into early August of 2006. And eventually, of course, we do get into the meat of the hurricane season of 06, and we will eventually talk about the one big, if you want to call it that, mission that I had that year, and that was Tropical Storm Ernesto. We're going to get there, but first, this look back at this big project that Lowe's had asked me to do. I was working with their community relations department. A gentleman named Robert Eggleston was up there in charge of all that. He was in charge of my project. And he asked me to do something really neat that we're going to talk about here after the music break as we continue with this edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. All right, so I just got back from the Central Gulf Coast. It's late July or so, 2006. And remember, I was down there checking out the Plaquemines Parish, that no man's land where Katrina had made landfall, the first landfall, all that devastating surge damage. I had also visited the Mississippi Gulf Coast and really sort of absorbed all of this aftermath, how everything felt 11 months after Katrina. And I got an email when I got back from Robert at Lowe's, and he was asking me to give him a call. He had a project that he wanted to talk to me about, so I did that, and boy, it was music to my ears. He said that he had done some research and reading about the weather data that was available during Katrina, and there was such a lack of it, and it was such a shame. There needs to be more weather data. And, you know, what could we do to solve that? If they were to fund a project where we could put some high-end weather stations along the coast of Mississippi, would I like to be in charge of that? You know, and it's like, would I? You know, that is right up my alley. Of course I would. And he said the budget was already there for it. Lowe's was very proactive in doing a whole bunch of different things to help out after the devastating 05 hurricane season. And so it was not going to take a year or 6 months or, you know, even a month. It was just, hey, let's get this done. We'll get the funding for it and we'll get you rolling now. We want it in this summer. And I was like, all right, that works for me. So I did a proposal up for Robert, sent it to him probably as a Word document, knowing me back then. And it outlined basically three weather stations, high-end weather stations. And what I mean by that, we would have an Arm Young anemometer. Those are the best anemometers money can buy, in my opinion. Very high-end, professional, scientific-grade anemometers. That's what I used on the Tahoe. That's what they use in a lot of the tornado research. That's what they use on the NOAA hurricane buoys. You know, they are truly scientific instruments. You don't go to the mall and buy these at Brookstone or whatever. All right. So, yeah, want to use the best? I would use Davis instruments for everything else, all the other sensible weather. And when I say sensible, that means weather that you can feel: temperature, humidity, dew point, rainfall, and air pressure. And so I put together a budget for the anemometer, the weather station, the Davis weather station, really the computer part. We didn't need the Davis anemometer. They're pretty good, you know, for a home weather station, but the RM Young is just a better, more rugged anemometer. And we would put all of this on a 10-meter meteorological tower from a company down in Vero Beach, Florida, Aluma Tower, I think's their name. Those towers were about $700 each. And, you know, we needed some laptops for everything to get powered by, and, you know, data loggers and just all kinds of stuff, right? And, you know, the total was about $22,000 for all of the equipment. And I would build in a few thousand dollars for my travel and a couple grand for my time. And they accepted my budget and we were good to go. And they fast tracked it and said, okay, send me an invoice. We'll get this paid in a couple of weeks. And, you know, I'd be all set. And I already had some cash on hand. And so I went ahead and bought some of this equipment ahead of time and got it ordered. And then I would just reimburse myself when Lowe's paid me, right? So, yeah, everything was all set. So by very early August, I took the trailer, this flatbed trailer that I had used in 2005 to haul around that big old buoy thing. I called it the Behemoth, that 5-meter, 600-pound wind tower that we got Edwards Crane to build. We weren't using that anymore. It just was too cumbersome. And so I still had this trailer, and I thought, yeah, I'll just take the trailer down to Vero Beach, and I'll pick up these wind towers, and they come in sections. There are three towers, three sections each, and they total 10 meters or about 35 feet or so, whatever. 10 meters equates to like 35, 33, 35 feet, something like that. And I'll haul all these over to Mississippi, and I will pick up some supplies at Lowe's, concrete, and rebar and other stuff that I need to put everything together. I was like real confident, like, you know, what do you need to put up these freestanding towers? You need concrete. That would be the base. And the concrete has to be 3 feet into the ground. And that would hold up this wind tower. And they were freestanding, no guy wires needed. And they would hold about 100 mile per hour wind load. Not ideal, but, you know, pretty good for the budget that we had and the fact that we couldn't put guy wires up where we were going to set these towers out. So what I did is I arranged for each of the three coastal counties to have one of these weather stations. I was working on it anyway, and I was successful with Hancock County, and that is where Bay St. Louis is, and it was the Bay Waveland Middle School. I worked with the principal at the time. Her name was Carolyn. We had everything arranged, all set. We had a little letter of agreement between us and Lowe's, and that was going to be the first site. And I was working on Harrison County, which is where Gulfport is, and Biloxi, and then Jackson County, where Pascagoula is. I had interest from Jackson County, from their emergency operations center, which was right there in downtown Pascagoula. Hadn't really had much luck with Harrison County. It was just a little bit different, the way the government operates there, et cetera. There was just more involved. But we had a commitment from Bay Waveland Middle School, so off I went. We wanted to get at least one of these up that summer before the one-year anniversary of Katrina on August 29th, 2006. So everything's in place. I'm going to take these towers and all this equipment over to Bay St. Louis and set everything up. I figured, you know, it might take a day or two, maybe three, and we'll be good to go. I'll have this awesome 10-meter tower. We'll have some press come out and have them cover it, and, you know, it'll be a big deal. Lowe's will be there. good press for Lowe's, good for the weather industry as a whole. This data would be live on the HurricaneTrack.com website, free for everybody, streaming into this interface that my good friend, childhood friend and programmer Jason Sikoski had created through what we called our HurtWind, H-I-R-T, Hurricane Intercept Research Team, the HurtWind project, as we called it, this user interface where you would have like a webcam image and then all of this data streaming in on this nice little neat web page, and it would just dynamically refresh right in front of your eyes, updating every minute, and it would be publicly available, you know, like HurricaneTrack.com/BayWaveland or something. That was the URL back in the day. Might even be sitting out there somewhere on the Internet Archive at the, what is it, archive.org or something like that? I can't remember. There is some website out there that like supposedly archives everything in different index files or something like that. I don't know if they still do it, but anyhow, I digress. It was going to be freely available, and I was really excited about it. So I'm driving across I-10 with this trailer behind me with these towers strapped down, you know, in their sections. The people at Aluma Tower helped me to ratchet strap them to this trailer, and I get over to Gulfport. I don't remember exactly when this was, very early August, something like that. And I went over to Lowe's in Gulfport and worked with the manager there. And, you know, they said, okay, whatever you need, we'll write it off or whatever and invoice the headquarters to reimburse us for whatever supplies you want. Some concrete, some rebar, wrenches, tools, hammers, mallets, whatever, cables, some copper wire, nuts, bolts, you know, just miscellaneous stuff, a few hundred dollars worth of supplies, buckets, trowels, you know, whatever, right? Extension cord, a big grinder if I needed that. And they were very helpful. I pulled up into the parking lot, got all my stuff, worked with a couple of people at Lowe's. And, you know, it was like, yeah, everything's going to work great. I've got this. And I went to my hotel, got a good night's sleep, and went over to Bay Waveland the next day. And I worked with the building supervisor, whatever their official title is, like the main, not construction head, but, you know, like, it's not the janitor, but whoever is in charge of, like, maintenance, the maintenance supervisor for maybe all the schools in Hancock County, but certainly for Bay Waveland. I worked with that guy. We chose a spot outside of a classroom on one of the wings of the middle school, and it was in sort of this U-shaped area. The tower, the 10-meter tower, would stick above the roof line by probably 10 feet or so, so it was nice and clear, and it would be about 5 feet out from one of the classrooms, and we would put this concrete pad in, run the wiring into the window, and, you know, everybody was all excited about it. It was like, all right, here we go, and I dropped off all the supplies for myself. I had my Tahoe there towing this trailer, and, you know, I got there, and it just kind of dawned on me. I was like, all right, What do I do now? Like, it was just funny because I thought, yeah, this is easy. You dig a hole, you put concrete in it, you put the rebar for these little pillar things that hold the tower up. You let it set for a couple of days, and then you put the tower up. Like, how hard could this be? And I started realizing immediately just how hard it could be. I mean, it was like hot, you know, early August there in Mississippi, sultry. And, you know, there's insects out there bothering me. There's ants crawling around, and I'm trying to dig this hole. And somebody in the building department was asking me, like, you know, do you know what you're doing? I was like, I think so. I'm supposed to put this tower up. I showed him the instructions, and it had this whole thing about building this concrete slab, for the lack of a better word, that had to go down. I think it was 36 inches deep by maybe 36 inches or so. It can't be that wide, maybe 2 feet, 2 feet across and 3 feet down, something like that. All this construction lingo that I had no idea about, you know, and it was like, I don't know how to do this. I was like, do you know how to do this? He's like, I do, but I got other stuff to do. I can't help you, man. You should have figured this out. And I was like, oh boy. So I started feeling like, I've really bitten off more than I can chew here. I'm going to look really dumb. You know, I cannot screw this up. So I covered up the stuff with a tarp that I had bought. I at least thought about that. You know, if you don't finish and it starts raining, you get one of those afternoon thunderstorms, you can't have all your concrete get rained on. So I wrapped everything up in this tarp, went to the hotel, and I sent an email to Robert, and I was just real honest. I was like, yeah, so I don't really know how to do this, the construction part. I have to build like a form, and I got to pour the concrete in, and there's a certain way to do that, and I got to let everything set, and it really needs about a week, not just a couple of days. We're not talking about building some, you know, little sidewalk out in front of my house or whatever, and the kids can put their handprints on it and write your name, and you know, this is a big deal. It's got to hold up a 35-foot tower, you know, that weighs a few hundred pounds or whatever, and it's kind of serious, and so help. Like, what do I do? And I went to bed. I was kind of nervous about it. Got up the next morning. It's, you know, 8:30 in the morning there in Mississippi, so it's already 9:30 Eastern time where Lowe's headquarters is in North Carolina. Robert got the email. He was on top of it, of course, and he really appreciated the honesty, you know, that, yeah, it's good to admit sometimes when you have bitten off more than you can chew. He appreciated that, sort of the humbleness of it, if you will. Then, you know, my hubris got the best of me that, yeah, I can handle anything. I'm gifted with electronics, so how hard can this be? Well, you know, it turns out I wasn't good at construction at all. So he said, all right, you know, there's plenty of people down there that need work. And find somebody, talk to somebody at Lowe's or somebody at the school. Somebody knows somebody that, you know, needs a couple hundred bucks, maybe 500 at the most. It can't be that many hours of work to build this concrete pad, and you know, pay them, and I'll reimburse you. We'll pay for it ourselves. Lowe's will cover it. And he was cool about it. And that's what I really liked about this guy and the whole can-do attitude of the Lowe's project that I was in charge of. I was in charge of my project. Robert was in charge of green lighting stuff. And, you know, it was just nice. It was nice not to have to worry about it. So I did just that. I talked to a couple people from the school. Somebody knew somebody. And they said, yeah, we'll get this guy out here. I got his number. And I called him, and he said he was busy doing other stuff, which you could imagine. You know, people, yes, they were looking for work, because the area was devastated economically because of Katrina, but they could always use more work, right? And he would eventually get to it. Might take him a few days, maybe a week. But yeah, you know, I don't remember the guy's name, but he was like, yep, I can do it. So I went on back to North Carolina and again, covered everything up with a tarp, told him where everything was, said too, if you need to go to Lowe's and get anything, you know, just talk to so-and-so, the manager, and they can help you out, and it won't cost anything. And we agreed I would wire him the money probably when he was done. I guess that would make the most sense, right? And we didn't have Venmo and apps. I mean, there wasn't even an iPhone in 2006. Not yet. Steve Jobs and company, they were working on it, but it wasn't ready just yet. So this is when you would wire people money. I guess they still do that even today, but that's how we did it. So yeah, we had an agreement, and the guy went ahead and did the work whenever it was, several days later, and he called me and said, hey, it's done, and cool. I went over to Walmart, Western Union, whatever, and sent the guy, I think it was like $350 or something like that, as it only took him a few hours, and he really, really appreciated it, said that he could totally use it, had some repairs to do on his car or something, and he was just so grateful, and he sent me pictures. Somebody had a digital camera and he got them to send me the pictures through some other email or something. And it was just like, yes, you know, to see this pad completed, and it had these three sort of shafts coming up out of it. These cylinders, if you will, that stuck up out of the concrete by, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 inches. And the tower would fit into these and then kind of fold in. You put these pins through, you lock the bottom down. Once the tower is upright, and you're good to go. And like I said, it would take about 100 miles an hour of wind to knock that sucker over. And, you know, once I saw the pictures, and he said, yeah, it's going to take a few days to finish curing for everything to set, and you're good to go. It was freaking awesome. I was like, all right, solving problems here. We're getting stuff done. This weather station project is going to work. Now I just had to schedule the time to go back to Mississippi and do my part. So it probably wasn't more than a week or so after this guy had the concrete pad all set and ready to go that I decided I would head on back down there. I took Jesse Bass with me, my good friend and partner there from Southeast Virginia. He went down to Bay St. Louis with me to help finish everything up. And it was nice because he does a little bit of construction work as a carpenter in Southeast Virginia there at Tidewater Community College. So, you know, he was going to be helpful in getting the tower upright, securing all the bolts and everything. There was still a little bit of technical expertise that needed to be completed with the construction side of things. But the hardest part, this concrete pad, that was done. It was ready to receive this freestanding tower, and we would be good to go. So we went down and finished everything up, put the anemometer on there, did the grounding wire, this big copper wire, and fastened it to the tower to ground it, you know, for any potential lightning problems. And, you know, wired it all up, got it the wires into the classroom, sealed off a little hole, probably with some silicone or something. Got the laptop fired up, connected to the school's internet. Did some testing, and voila, we had live weather data from Bay St. Louis there, the Bay Waveland Middle School. Did a little bit of a press junket, you know, different newspapers coming out to do some articles, some photographs, whatever. The store manager from the local Lowe's, the principal was there, of course, maybe a couple of other school officials from the public school system down there. Kind of a big deal, you know, especially here coming up almost to the one-year anniversary of Katrina. Quite a shining moment in an otherwise pretty bleak situation down there. Got to talk to some of these kids about hurricanes and what they went through, the importance of weather data, how we measure wind speed, and just how hard it is to gather good, reliable data that hurricanes are destructive and sometimes they destroy equipment and we don't really get a true sense of what happened from a meteorological perspective. Measuring the real data, you know, of these storms, these events, it's important. And just trying to underscore that we're trying to do something good, some positives here coming out of this very tragic and disruptive event in these children's lives at the Bay Waveland Middle School. It was a very fulfilling moment for me, for Jesse to be involved with it. I was very excited about it. But I still had two other towers and complete weather stations to deal with. And, you know, where are they going to go? And like I said, I was working on something in Jackson County, where Pascagoula is, and that seemed pretty set, that we were going to do it over at the EOC there, the Emergency Operations Center. Now, that building that they're housed in downtown Pascagoula already had some kind of a brick, kind of like smokestack-looking column that rose several tens of feet above the building. It was just like right outside the EOC. I don't remember exactly what it was. Been there a long time. Katrina didn't knock it over. Camille didn't knock it over. It was pretty solid. And it already had some kind of a mast sort of bolted on there or whatever, and it just happened to be about an inch in diameter. So, hey, they just needed to get a crane, like a bucket truck or something, and they could put that anemometer on there and we could wire everything in. We can have as long a cable as we need to coming from the anemometer, several hundred feet if we needed, and that could run into the EOC and, you know, we could wire everything up. That took a little bit longer, a few more weeks, and we get through and into the meat of the hurricane season. And so we're going to kind of skip over a couple things here because in between, of course, we had Ernesto at the end of August. But in this particular story, keeping on this particular thread, if you will, among all the stories that I've got to tell you still, eventually we got the weather station set up at Pascagoula in the EOC there later on in the summer of 06. It took a little longer, but it was up and running. But I didn't need that particular meteorological tower, that aluminum tower, because they already had their own brick column, like I was telling you, this smokestack or whatever the heck it was. So I had a spare tower. I was like, okay, maybe we'll use this for some other location if Lowe's wants to do this elsewhere in the country. You never know. I mean, I just all of a sudden in my inventory had a spare 10-meter freestanding aluminum tower. Then there was the question of what are we going to do in Harrison County? And I worked as best I could to try to get something maybe at their government facility. But just, again, the way they're, not the politics, but just the way the paperwork and the bureaucracy, it was just different for Gulfport, and it took forever. And eventually I kind of ran out of time, and 06 ended, and we got into 07, and other things came up, and it just never happened. I did actually speak to WLOX, and their chief meteorologist at the time, I don't recall the name. He really wasn't real keen on it because they already had something from, I don't remember, maybe WeatherSTEM or somebody had already provided an anemometer, and the guy kind of felt threatened by me. It was a weird conversation. I remember Mike Watkins went with me to talk to this gentleman, whoever the chief was at the time. He just wasn't real happy about it. He's like, you know, don't you know we already have a weather station and it's right here, and why do we need another one? And I don't know. It felt like we were in competition with each other, and it was just a very awkward meeting. And we were like, okay, sorry, you know, not trying to step on your toes here. Lowe's is wanting to donate this thing. It's like free. And, you know, he's like, we already got our own thing. We're good. You know, like, this is my area. It was just weird. And sometimes you're going to run into that. You know, different people have different personalities. And I was like, all right, whatever. And so, like I said, time kind of ran out on the project there for Harrison County. And I never put the station up. I just never could do it. And eventually, skipping way ahead here, just kind of jumping around the timeline a little bit, in my life and in my career, all good things come to an end, and eventually the Lowe's project itself ended. Now, I don't want to talk too much about that yet, because that's a big, big deal. That happened later in 07, just to kind of spoil that for you a little bit. The clock ran out on everything. So the bottom line is we had 2 out of the 3 weather stations in Mississippi, 1 in Bay St. Louis, at the Bay Waveland Middle School. Already told you about that. It was up and running and good to go. Really neat to see that weather data. Storms would go through, you know, over the next few years. And we'll talk about it again later when we get to 08, because we had an actual hurricane there eventually. And then, of course, in Pascagoula, we had the weather station there at that particular EOC. And it was cool, you know. It was like, all right, we got some live data, live webcam images from there. Every once in a while, these would be on TV. I remember even the Weather Channel from time to time would tap in and show these on the air. I had a couple of contacts there before I really started working with them many years later, skipping way ahead in the timeline here. But it was all in all a big success. And what's interesting, and we're going to revisit this in the future, is this not finishing the project in Mississippi left me, you know, just to kind of summarize it here, with 1 meteorological tower and no weather station with it, because that was at Pascagoula, but I had the tower, so I had a full 10-meter tower, and then I had a complete system. The tower, the Arm Young anemometer, the data logger, the laptop, everything, you know, the full thousands of dollars worth of equipment, and nowhere to put it. It had no home. And again, the clock ran out. My relationship with Lowe's would come to an end in 07. We'll talk about that later. And so we're going to revisit this down the road. This is planting the seed, or seeds plural, I guess, for what happens later, kind of serendipitously, that I get to keep this equipment, you know, which was no big deal. You know, Lowe's said, okay, well, we'll figure out somewhere to use it. You can use it in the field, you know, maybe some other school somewhere. It's paid for, you've got it, you know how to set it up, and whatever. It was not a problem that I wasn't able to get everything set up. I didn't have to. It wasn't like government money where if you don't spend it, and sometimes even corporate money, you lose it or whatever. I didn't have to return the inventory or anything like that, and it would end up later serving me very well, and we'll talk about that in a future episode here. But this plants the seed for that. So there's kind of 2 stories here to kind of wrap up this episode. Very exciting to do this project in Mississippi. I was very proud to represent Lowe's. I was glad that they were supporting weather data and education and all that. That was really cool. I would go back a couple of other times to kind of follow up on these weather stations, keeping them maintained. And when I would go do that later in the fall of 06 and then into early 07 and the spring of 07, this project continued on for a few more months. I'd get to go back and keep the weather stations up to date, whatever, and go talk to the school or go talk to a Rotary Club or a Civitan Club. We call those Civic Clubs. And we would talk about these weather stations. You know, it was kind of the pride and joy of Mississippi there. I don't remember at this point in time. I know that there was the I think it's called the Weather Stem something another. There's also Weather Flow. Very familiar company, especially these days. You know, there was weather data around the country. It wasn't like I had the only private weather stations or anything closely, you know, resembling that. But this was a big deal to me for my project. It helped Hurricane Track become more credible with, you know, real meteorological data from 10 meters, at least 10 meters. You know, the Pascagoula site, I think, was about 45 feet above ground level. And it was just exciting. And so that's one story. And then sort of the other story that we'll revisit is, again, it left me with equipment and these two meteorological towers that eventually I would do something with. And we will revisit this in a future episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. We're going to come back to this and you'll see there's even more, I don't want to say comedy. I mean, everything I do, I try to do very seriously, but there's some other funny moments coming up as I shift from dealing with not understanding construction and concrete pads to, you know, well, how do I do this in the field and try to set up a 10-meter tower, you know, out in the middle of nowhere? We're going to revisit that in another episode. Trust me, it's coming up, and it's quite comical, I will say. So we'll get there, all right? So that's the story of the weather stations in Mississippi. And we'll eventually talk about what happened to them. I know you're probably wondering, are they still there? Whatever happened to them? We're going to get to that. You know, all good things, right? But this is the time frame. Okay, this is, again, mid-August to almost late August 2006. I had to wrap up this project, what I could of it, in August there. And then we started dealing with our one big event of 06, and that would be Tropical Storm Ernesto. And that is the topic of the next episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway for next week. All right? All right. So that'll do it for this edition. Again, as always, I appreciate you tuning in. The next episode, we will cover Ernesto. And I'm also, with that episode, going to discuss the H-Wharf model. I've been trying to get different people to come on with me to talk about it, but schedules, the holidays, when I'm putting this together, no matter when you're listening to it, I have to record it at some certain point of time, right? And we're doing so near the holidays here in 2021, near the Christmas holiday, and it's just hard as heck to get people to come on. So I'm just going to do it myself, and I'm going to tell you all about Ernesto, the one big event there in the otherwise pretty lackluster 2006 hurricane season, which, you know, was a good thing, believe me. We needed it after the 05 year, of course. But yep, we'll talk about Ernesto and how that related to this new H-Wharf model, the Hurricane Weather Research Forecast Model. Mike Watkins and I had another term for it, which I'm probably going to have that bleep sound effect for you. You'll see. Make sure you tune into that as we discuss Ernesto and the H-Wharf model in the next edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. Again, thanks for tuning in. I am Mark Suddeth. I'll talk to you again next time.